the Palestinians, there's plenty of violence and terror on both sides, which is awful and no way to justify it. But the fact is the Palestinians have been under military occupation for 35 years. It has been harsh and brutal and violent throughout, racist, humiliating, destructive. It has been backed entirely by the United States unilaterally. It includes expansion of settlement into the occupied territories. It was actually Barak in his last year broke all records since Oslo, always supported by the United States. There's just no symmetry. And in the diplomatic scene, the problem is, I mean, there is plenty of criticism you can make about the Arab states. In fact, it's hard to think of anything nice to say about them. But the fact of the matter is that what has been blocking what is now the Saudi Arabian plan is unilateral U.S.-Israeli opposition.
Well, given what you're saying about the brutality of the occupation, do you think the Palestinian suicide bombers are freedom fighters or terrorists?
They're terrorists. I mean, they're both, actually. You know, they're trying to fight for freedom, but doing it in a totally unacceptable, immoral and way. Of course, they're terrorists. They finally were, and there's been Palestinian terrorism all the way through. I've always opposed it. I oppose it now. But it's very small as compared with the U.S.-backed Israeli terrorism. You know, quite typically, violence reflects the means of violence. It's not unusual. State terror is almost always much more extreme than retail terror. And this is no exception.
Well, if you accept that the bombers are not justified, the argument then shifts to whether or not the victims of those terrorist bombings have the right to take whatever action they deem necessary to put an end to this, which has been Ariel Sharon's justification of his assault from the beginning.
They are certainly justified in defending themselves, but they are not justified in occupying another people and in gross violation of international law with brutality and terror of their own. That's not justified, and that's been going on for 35 years. So if a political settlement, if there's moves towards a real political settlement, if the U.S. and Israel will accept that, then they would be entirely justified in defending themselves. But you can't call it self-defense when you're carrying out a military occupation. That doesn't justify the terrorist acts. But the concept self-defense doesn't arise.
Is there any case for comparisons between the Palestinian suicide bombers and the September 11 suicide bombers?
None whatsoever. I mean, the Al-Qaeda was not under U.S. military occupation. Incidentally, they claim they were. Like, their justification is that the U.S. was occupying Saudi Arabia, which, you know, you can argue about their claim. It certainly doesn't justify the act. What the right response was to the terrorist bombings on September 11th is another question. If we want to talk about that, we should be willing to establish some principles. So, for example, one elementary principle is that if something is right for us, then it's right for others. If it's wrong for others, it's wrong for us. If you can't accept that principle, we can't even talk about right and wrong. So if those who believe that the right way to respond to September 11th was by bombing Afghans should also believe that the right way to respond to U.S. terror is by bombing Washington. I don't know anybody who believes that. I certainly don't. So therefore, if we almost the entire discussion of this topic that has taken place since September 11th can simply be excluded on the grounds that it does not even rise to the minimal moral level. That does leave open the question of what the right response was to Al-Qaeda terrorism, and I believe that there was a right response, not the one that was taken, but that has nothing to do with what's going on in Israel and Palestine.
Israel's case is precisely that there are comparisons to be made, and that therefore they're justified in applying the U.S. remedies to terrorism up to and including regime change.
The parallel is ridiculous. Israel has been carrying out, carried out a 35-year occupation which has been brutal, violent, harsh, destructive from the start. There's just no comparison. That does not justify Palestinian terrorist acts or the more extreme Israeli terrorist acts, which continue. But it's just there's just no way to make to compare it in any sensible fashion.
Can we shift now to a broader focus and President Bush's plans to attack Iraq, which are critically affected, obviously, by what's happening in the Middle East? Now, would the credible threat of a terrorist attack using weapons of mass destruction justify a preemptive strike against Iraq?
Preemptive strikes need extremely strong evidence, and there's a heavy burden of justification. There's nothing remotely like that. It's extremely hard to take Bush and his advisors seriously when they talk about their reasons for wanting to depose Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein is a monster. There's no doubt about that. And getting rid of him would be a boon to the people of Iraq and the world. But Bush and his advisors are not opposed to him, either because of his crimes or because of his efforts to develop weapons of mass destruction. And we all know that. When he committed his worst crimes, that was with the support of this president's father. The support continued, Britain as well, well after the worst crimes were committed. He was a loyal friend and ally. Furthermore, Britain and the United States, continued to provide him with the means to develop weapons of mass destruction. And he was much more dangerous then than he is now. So whatever the reason, and furthermore, if you take a look at the people the United States is trying to gather to replace him, like General Khazraji, who can't even come to the meeting because he's under indictment in Denmark, under investigation in Denmark for participation in the Halabja massacre. Does that indicate any effort to bring some decent outcome for the Iraqi people? The U.S. has the question of what should be done about Saddam Hussein is a very serious question, but you cannot take these people seriously.
What sort of proofs, though, would they have to supply? Because those proofs appear to be beyond the scope of international agencies to provide. In the end, won't they end up relying on their own intelligence agencies?
It's not trusting its own intelligence. It's trusting its own intentions, which is something quite different. We do not have any reason to believe that a state, with any state for that matter, but certainly not one with the record of the United States, should be given any authorization whatsoever to act independently, violently, on the basis of the intentions of the leadership, of its own leadership groups. That's ridiculous. We don't allow it to anyone else. Why should we allow it to the United States?
What about a preemptive strike, as was suggested recently by a former CIA director, specifically aimed at facilities that produce chemical, nuclear, or biological weapons?
First of all, they don't have any, they certainly have made available no evidence about such facilities or any indication that they pose a threat or even that they have a way of attacking them, and that's not what they're aiming at. What they're aiming at, after all, we all know, and let's not be innocent. Iraq has the second largest oil reserves in the world. One way or another, the U.S. is going to attempt to regain control over them and to deny them to its adversaries who have an inside track, primarily France and Russia, and they may think this is a good pretext for it. That Saddam Hussein remains the same monster he was when the U.S. and Britain actively and happily supported him right through his worst crimes, right through the period when he was dangerous and developing weapons of mass destruction. That remains true, but let's not delude ourselves about the reasons that might be used as a pretext, the actual reasons for what will be described under other pretexts.
But there is a growing momentum in statements by American political leaders and in the press and in statements leaked by intelligence agencies to provide proofs to at least convince the U.S. public that an attack on Iraq is necessary.
Well, there's no doubt that I would drop the word proofs, but there's no doubt that serious efforts are being made to construct pretexts which will justify an attack against Iraq in an effort to regain control over the world's second largest oil reserves. To get rid of Saddam Hussein, that would be a boon, as I said, but that's not the goal. The goal is, in fact, as it was described pretty accurately, remember that right after the Gulf War, when the U.S. had total control over the region, there was an uprising in the south, the Shiite uprising, which might very well have toppled Saddam Hussein, except that George Bush the First effectively authorized Saddam Hussein to crush it by using military helicopters and other means. And that was explained publicly. So, for example, Thomas Friedman, who was then the diplomatic correspondent of the New York Times, wrote that this was necessary because, as he put it, the best of all worlds for the United States would be an iron-fisted military junta which would rule Iraq the same way Saddam Hussein did, much to the pleasure of U.S. allies, Turkey and Saudi Arabia, and of course, though he didn't mention it, the boss in Washington. Yeah, that was the attitude then when Bush permitted Saddam Hussein to crush a Shiite rebellion, and there's been no change. If the U.S. does do something to try to regain control of Iraq by force, it has to maintain that condition. It cannot allow a democratic regime to emerge, even limited democracy, because the majority of the population is Shiite. And if there's any democratic participation, chances are quite strong that it will move towards an alliance with Iran, or at least towards connections with Iran, which the U.S. will certainly block, which is exactly why the U.S. is now trying to organize Iraqi generals who were involved in some of the worst atrocities to be the iron-fisted military junta, which will be a Sunnite military junta, to rule Iraq the way Saddam Hussein did, just as Thomas Friedman described and indeed advocated.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. President pro tempore, members of Congress, and fellow Americans. Once again, we are joined together in a great cause. Our goal is making money. Our goal is remaking the world and imposing radical beliefs on people everywhere. The United States respects terrorists. After all, we are currently the largest source of terrorists, but we condemn humanitarian aid. Our leaders dictate the entire world, and tonight the United States of America is committing murder. By sponsoring and sheltering and supplying terrorists, by aiding and abetting murder, our terrorists commit evil, threatening people everywhere. Our terrorist directive commands them to kill and make no distinctions among military and civilians, including women and children. Our group and its leader are linked to many other organizations in different countries. There are thousands of our terrorists in more than 60 countries. They are recruited from their own nations and neighborhoods and brought to camps in places where they are trained in the tactics of terror. They are sent back to their homes or sent to hide in countries around the world to plot our evil and destruction. Our terrorists kill not merely to end lives, but to disrupt and end freedom. The United States of America makes the following demands: commit evil, deliver to United States authorities all blood of a loving and giving people, men and women from El Salvador, Iran, Mexico, and Japan. Nations from Latin America to Asia to Africa to Europe to the Islamic world, people have been brutalized in your country and by millions more in countries that America is trying in effect to hijack the entire world. These demands are not open to negotiation or discussion. Give the United States full access to democratically elected governments so we can make sure they are no longer operating. Close immediately and permanently and hand over every freedom. Our war on freedom begins, but it does not end there. It will not end until every justice and freedom and every government that supports freedom of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated. We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail. This is the fight of all who believe in committing murder. Tonight, I thank my terrorists. All deserve our thanks for what you have already done and for what you will do and for what we will do together. We will come together to improve our prosperity, to dramatically expand our power, by sacrificing human life to serve our radical visions, follow in the path of fascism, our Nazism, and our totalitarianism. Follow that path all the way to where it ends, by abandoning every value except the will to power, a task that does not end. We bring the murderous ideologies of the 20th century. We bring lies. We bring destruction. We bring danger. We bring blood, casualties of war, on thousands of civilians. In a single day, on a peaceful morning, they will hand over $40 billion to meet the needs of our military. And I ask you to give it. We bring unmarked graves, but it does not end there. The entire world has seen for itself our vision for the world is one of fear, a world where freedom itself is under attack. This will not be an age of freedom. This will be an age of terror, here and across the world. With every atrocity, the world grows fearful because we stand in their way. Our first responsibility is our prosperity. We have found our mission. The advance of fascism, the great achievement of our time and the great hope of every time, now depends on us. I will not yield. I will not rest. I will not relent in waging this struggle for Nazism and fascism. We will rally the world to this cause by our efforts. Freedom can threaten the stability of our prosperity. And you know what? We're not going to allow it. Our leaders are self-appointed. These measures are essential. The only way to defeat freedom as a threat to our way of life is to stop it, eliminate it, and destroy it where it grows. I have a message for the entire world. Be ready. Your children may be next. I've called the armed forces to alert, and there is a reason. The hour is coming when America will act. We're in a fight for power. We hate freedoms. We hate progress and pluralism, tolerance and freedom. We overthrow existing governments in many countries only as our leaders dictate. How will we fight and win this war? We will direct every resource at our command, every tool of intelligence, every financial influence, and every necessary weapon of war to the disruption and to the defeat of freedom. Our response involves far more than instant retaliation, but a lengthy campaign, unlike any other we have ever seen. It may include dramatic strikes and covert operations, secret even in success. We will starve the entire world of freedom, turn them one against another, drive them from place to place, until there is no refuge or no rest. And we will pursue nations that provide aid or safe haven to democratically elected governments. The course of this conflict is not known, yet its outcome is certain. Freedom and fear, justice and cruelty have always been at war, and we know that our Nazism is not neutral between them. Fellow citizens, we'll meet liberty with destruction. Assured of the rightness of our cause and confident of the destruction to come.
And that's why the propaganda system is so successful. Very few people are going to have the time or the energy or the commitment to carry out the constant battle that's required to get outside of, McNeely or Dan Rather or somebody like that. The easy thing to do, you come home from work, you're tired, you've had a busy day, you're not going to spend the evening carrying out a research project. So you turn on the tube, you say, it's probably right. So you look at the headlines in the paper and then you watch the sports or something. That's basically the way the system of indoctrination works. Sure, the other stuff is there, but you're going to have to work to find it. modern industrial civilization has developed within a certain system of convenient myths. The driving force of modern industrial civilization has been individual material gain, which is accepted as legitimate, even praiseworthy, on the grounds that private vices yield public benefits in the classic formulation. Now, it's long been understood very well that a society that is based on this principle will destroy itself in time. It can only persist with whatever suffering and injustice it entails as long as it's possible to pretend that the destructive forces that humans create are limited, that the world is an infinite resource, and that the world is an infinite garbage can. At this stage of history, either one of two things is possible. Either the general population will take control of its own destiny and will concern itself with community interests, guided by values of solidarity and sympathy and concern for others, or alternatively, there will be no destiny for anyone to control. As long as some specialized class is in a position of authority, it is going to set policy in the special interests that it serves. But the conditions of survival, let alone justice, require rational social planning in the interests of the community as a whole, and by now that means the global community. The question is whether privileged elites should dominate mass communication and should use this power as they tell us they must, namely to impose necessary illusions, to manipulate and deceive the stupid majority and remove them from the public arena. The question, in brief, is whether democracy and freedom are values to be preserved or threats to be avoided. In this possibly terminal phase of human existence, democracy and freedom are more than values to be treasured. They may well be essential to survival.
He's up there thinking for himself, and he's deciphering this tremendously overweighted body of information, which he puts into an order and gives you the feeling that you can do the same thing, that the whole thing is decipherable.